Good morning. It is 9 a.m. It's time for the Thursday, July 7th, 2016 County Administration Workshop. And we begin with the fast approaching General Counsel. The first item is business assessor. And discussion regarding SB 1513, which will be explained to us by Ms. Rocha, I believe.
All right. Well, we've talked about this a couple of times, but this is the new bill passed in the last legislative session that allows for a property tax exemption for police officers, firefighters, reserve officers under definitions in statute that would allow for a property tax exemption for killed in the line of duty, basically. And so I had previously made the recommendation to have it mirror the widow of a veteran who died of a service-connected illness or injury. Yes. You're right, spouse, because sometimes it is the other way around. But, yes, it's a widow or widower. Anyway.
Surviving spouse.
Surviving spouse.
And it has to be like a legal spouse. Yeah. Not a domestic partnership.
Correct. It is defined in here as a surviving spouse who is not remarried. And what was the other thing? And it has to be their main domicile. So it's their primary residence. So I had passed out some points that I wanted to just have you guys think about. I hope you've had a chance to go over those. And if you have any questions or anything at this point, or thoughts about what direction you want to go, I guess the first question is there interest in doing something, period? And so if there is something, period, then we need to know some guidance for, you know, what direction.
My concern, as I expressed the last time or the first time this came up, was this broad application, potential broad application of firefighters or whatever, that it could merge out to include anybody who picked up a weed whacker to fight a fire or whatever.
Yeah,
but that is pretty well delineated in there that is not so.
That's correct. It's in fact, it specifically says in the definition for fire service professional is the definition, and it says it does not mean forest fire protection agency personnel. So that would pretty much preclude the forest firefighters,
right.
I guess. And reserve officer is the other definition that does require that they're carrying an arm and responsible for criminal laws. So it wouldn't just be, you know, the guy out, you know, handicapped parking tickets,
mm-hmm.
If they're not carrying a firearm as part of their requirement, I guess.
I think we need to leave the definition up to the legislature.
Right. Well, and that's what I'm saying. I'm just explaining what those definitions are saying.
I don't want to say that a parking person, you know, involved in some sort of an altercation where their life is taken is any less valuable. But we're not making that determination.
No,
the legislature is.
Right. And
so.
Because there may... Now, if that parking ticket person is carrying an AR firearm as a part of his duties...
Right.
Then he would qualify.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
And the other part of the question was: is the amount of monies a kind of a thing? We had worded that is not mandated by the state. It has to be a certain amount.
There's a margin.
Right. There's a cap. But the way the statute reads is that part of it. Let's see, statute up to 250 of assessed value. So, and a county may provide by ordinance or resolution up to 250. And so, I think that's where there's some discretion on the board's ability to make a determination where they want to go with that.
So we have the options of doing nothing, which is what we chose kind of to do from the last time we talked about this, to establishing something mm-hmm. now, or doing something on a case-by-case basis. I think I'm in favor of either doing nothing or doing something as a standard policy instead of case-by-case.
I don't like the case-by-case issue.
No, that's the least.
No, that gets you into emotional decisions by someone at some point.
Right.
And that's what we're trying to avoid by having a policy in place that this is what it is.
As the liaison, I've talked to Connie quite a bit about this, and I did in passing talk to the sheriff about it, and I feel obligated to bring forward his recommendation, which is the full $250,000. Connie and I have talked about the idea that the veterans is set at a specific amount, mm-hmm. And I kind of feel from a philosophical standpoint of parity and fairness to say one person's financial compensation or benefit package, which is this is kind of included, should be parallel, should mirror. I wouldn't want to have it construed that the county's interpretation of a sacrifice of a family is different from one officer's giving or public service personnel in the armed forces. That to me seems like and one of the suggestions Connie had, which I think is really great, is that if we draft the policy to mirror that, the veterans, and whatever legislative changes they may make to that one, which they may make to that one, that we won't have to address this again. The general policy of the board is to follow the state guidelines for the veteran service stuff. So it might be, I like the recommendation. It seems clean, it seems simple, it seems fair. And administratively, for her to apply this from her office, having to do these deferments, and you have a ton to go through. Having two separate ones would make it more challenging. Having the same formula applied to either application, it's done. It's something else, not complicated.
Yeah, I like the all for one issue rather than having this is left-handed. You can't. That's a different rate. This kind of stuff. So it's just the top tier, I think, for just in county at least, is a little excessive, and for this kind of situation. I mean, it's nice and all that kind of stuff. That's not the issue. But is it where are we at as far as that figure goes? I mean, I don't really know if it's 250, but realistically, what does that mean for Josephine County?
In lost revenue, or what is it you're asking?
Well,
I'm not quite sure what you're
asking. If we're going to have a one plan fits all, and that's not in a pejorative sense, this is the
right.
easy sense.
Right.
If one plan fits all, how does that apply to this situation here?
So, well, if we had someone who qualified for this mm-hmm. exemption, they would be, under that scenario, they would be equal with the surviving spouse of a veteran in the amount of exemption that they were getting if we mirror it.
Mm-hmm. Applying it would be fairly easy.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm answering your question. But
how many veterans do we have taking advantage of that exemption now?
Of that particular, there's four different veterans exemptions, but the one I'm talking about, there's approximately 135 surviving spouses who are qualifying for that particular one.
And that is, I 25, is it 25,000 or 25%?
It's just under 25. It's, let's see, right, I have it down there. $24,190 this year. And it does
changes.
Have a 3% increase annually built in.
You said that there are four veteran exemption options. How did you pick that one?
Because it's the most similar, because it's the It's the surviving spouse of a veteran who died of service-connected injury or illness, which is, to me, the same, most like killed in the line of duty. There's a lower level of surviving spouse where they don't have that. You know, they had a veteran who passed away. They qualify under surviving spouse, but not to the level of service-connected. And then there's two for veterans themselves that are so.
And in the one surviving spouse benefit, VA benefit veterans, the amount goes up, and like here's up to $250,000. Is there an amount stipulated on the veterans as well, or how does that work?
It started out at a certain dollar amount that the legislature picked, and then they built in a 3% increase annually so that it goes up and kind of keeps the pace with inflation, I'm sure is the intent. And so, you know.
So this year it's at 24.
Right, and so next year we'd add 3% onto that.
Okay, so there's got to be some history involved in why we start off. People know that this average, and it's usually has a $25,000 for the veterans. Why would they start off at $250,000 for this?
Well, I can only speculate, so, you know,
okay.
But I would say that during the legislative hearings, there was some discussion about the inequality between the two. And that's one of my thoughts, is that it's very likely, very possible, that a future legislature will come back and revisit this, because this was done kind of fast without a lot of input. You know, it happened right after there was the officer killed on the coast. And so it, like, passed unanimously. I think there was an emotional element to that.
And I don't know that it's necessarily to say they start out at 250.
Right.
I think there's a range. Well, there's full discretion to the
right.
board.
So I mean, can we could choose to not do it at all? We could say
so
not at all.
Yeah.
But my sense is that I wouldn't be surprised if the legislature didn't come back and review the veteran at some point. And that's why I say if we mirror the veteran and they would come in and say, well, we want to do something with that, then we would just follow along with it without having to take extra action. That's kind of my thought process on it.
So Commissioner Hare says?
Yeah, I think it's really important that we not reinforce the disparity between veterans and right now we don't have anybody that we're aware of that may qualify. So I think we are in a situation that the legislature didn't have the freedom to not have to deal with it specifically with the person sitting across the table. Right now it's an administrative philosophical policy decision. So my thing is I got to tie it to the veterans. In fact, I can't support it if it isn't, because it just seems unfair to do anything different than that. And frankly, that probably puts more pressure on the legislature to say, was that your intent, $25,000, taking off the top kind of a deal? Maybe that's not what they wanted to do. Maybe that was too small. And so then they need to give the discretion to change the veterans. But until they do that, I'm not real comfortable moving it.
No, I would agree that there's some uniformity between these two issues. And there's no nice way to put it, but I mean, talking about the death of a surviving spouse, or death of a spouse, so talking about the benefit of the surviving families, yes. Okay, it's not going to compensate for the loss of your spouse, all kinds of stuff, that's the issue. But to have some conformity between the one and the other, I think, is a good idea. Not just to start off and saying, bing, okay, so what's the formula that we're using? And I would say I would concur with the benefit of the surviving spouse and family receipt, that could easily be attached to this as well.
I think I would advocate that it may need an adjustment. I have no problem kind of working with AOC on that issue in the next legislature, legislature, what's your intent here? Because I think you could do more.
You know, if they were asking me, I would almost think rather than a dollar amount, I would rather see a percentage of the value.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, if they're saying $250,000, well, our median taxable value is 150. You know, so we're going to wipe some people out of taxes altogether. Mm-hmm. And, you know, others maybe by half, but...
Well, yeah, and,
you know,
and
like,
you're applying a formula to 36 different counties who have a variety of assessments.
Exactly,
that,
because...
You know, some counties, $250,000 is the median.
Yeah, exactly.
And here, it's
not.
It's 100 over.
Yeah.
So it's like...
So if they set a percentage, like you got, you know, 10%, 20% off of your taxable value, you know, that would kind of make more sense to me and make it more equitable all the way.
Exactly.
But they're not there.
So, well,
so I guess the direction...
They didn't talk to me. They didn't talk to you.
So I guess bottom line right now...
This is also a good illustration that decisions made on the spur of the moment in the crisis of the issue are not generally good decisions in the long term.
Well, they could be better.
Yeah. And we've been through legislation before where they had to come back 2 and 3 times to get it right. And who knows whether this one will come back.
So what do you suggest we do with this now?
Well, we have, based on the legislation, there's two options. There's either a resolution
or an ordinance.
Yes.
It's interesting that they would pick those two, because my opinion of the hierarchy of things that the board can do, we have proclamation, which is a nice thing to do, but it means nothing. We have a resolution, which is not too far from that. It's a position of the county of feeling on an issue. And then you have an order, which is, in my opinion, an administrative element, a directive within the county to do this, which is what this applies to. We would be doing an order that tells the assessor, when this happens, this is what you do. An ordinance is a rule that applies to everybody in the county.
Yes.
Nobody else does assessment but the assessor. So why are we writing, you know, an ordinance, a law for everybody that only applies to one person?
Yeah.
So anyway, the legislature, again, didn't coordinate, obviously, with the Assessors Association, saying, what do you need to do this job? Because it's an order. So I don't know that we necessarily need to go through the process of doing an ordinance that very likely, and even if we wrote the perfect ordinance to mirror whatever the legislature did, they'd probably do something that wouldn't conform to the ability of the ordinance to implement that change. So I'm thinking if we can do it by legislation, by resolution, we just do it that way.
And, is covered in their in what they want to be done as well.
Right. And so the county may provide by ordinance or resolution.
Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
So we do a resolution, even though that wouldn't be what we would ideally like to do. Maybe we do a resolution.
And an order?
I think we have to do an order. Even if the resolution is what they ask for. The order is what gets the job done.
As long as there's a resolution tied up higher, then it'll be it.
One conforms with the legislature, one conforms with our practice of how does this happen? We go back to an order that tells us what to do. So.
Uniquely, property tax exemptions and increases are supposed to be done exclusively by ordinance. So as best anyone can tell, this is a unique carve out that the legislature has created by putting this resolution option in there.
And probably, yeah, every ordinance requires probably an order.
Well, it does. It does, yes, initially. So, as part of that.
So, if we begin with a resolution and have that appear on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
And that would be fine because then Commissioner Walker would be back on Wednesday anyway,
sure.
So she could be part of that decision making. And then whatever comes out as a result of that, we can make whatever next step is necessary.
I think giving the legislature another year to digest this.
So do we need to have Wally come back with some language for you to look at before it goes to a business session?
I don't think it should be that complicated, and the fact that, well, we've never done a resolution for this before, but it would probably mirror the language in an ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
We also have, do we have time before November, and you set the role, not that it's going to be even applied this year, because we don't have, but somebody could.
Right. Well,
I think we need to proceed.
The effective date...
Would be
next January would be the first time somebody could actually apply for it.
Okay. So there's really no rush.
Famous last words.
Yeah. Do you have, I mean, an ordinance is a lot more work than a resolution.
You know, I'd much rather start with the resolution first to see what happens, because it's, like I said, once you lock it in on an ordinance, then that's another.
Well, it's 100, well, then an effective date, 90 days after that, I mean, it's a trip.
Yeah.
Theoretically, before we finished and finalized the order with law, the legislature convened in February, they could be discussing a change.
Yeah.
I mean, you play this out a little bit. Let's just do a resolution.
Okay. My understanding is that the other counties that are doing it by resolution.
Yeah.
Based on listserv chatter.
Seen an ordinance.
Oh, there has been?
Yeah. Somebody did an ordinance, but I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with doing it. So you can draft up some resolution and look at.
This isn't an overly complicated. It's based on the veterans. I don't believe it. Board has
the famous last word, Commissioner Mayor.
Any direction to change it, I don't. I've thought about this, and I read the. I'm not going to deviate from the veterans' formula. So if a resolution mirrors that, I don't need to see it. It can go forward. You're going to have to. I don't think you're going to have it ready by next Wednesday. There's no rush.
Thank you. Yeah.
So let's just take our time.
Yeah.
Yeah, I have a problem with that. Sounds good. You understanding and say this is a wonderful idea. Okay,
I got it though.
And it's doable. Okay, thank you.
All right.
And legal counsel.
Legal counsel wasn't on the agenda. The only thing that I'm interested in is really interested in participating in the finalization of codification.
Okay.
That was my. One of my projects from day one.
Yes.
And I can't commend you guys for the diligence of keeping this up, but I think it's like any other project. It's the final stage of where it's most important, but it's also challenging. And whatever I can do to help in that effort.
Yeah.
I've done a style guide myself before. It's a little odd for anybody. I don't know, there's probably five people who ever have developed a style guide, but I have. I'm just... That's going to live forever. Once you pick how it's all laid out, they don't change Webster's dictionary and the formula. But, you know, anything I can do to help get it. I don't think that's the stumbling block. Pat, I've taken a look at one. Looks good. It's just whatever we can do to move it.
Yeah, as soon as the draft comes in.
Yes.
I would anticipate this month. That was our timeline laid out for us.
Fantastic.
Yep. And I think since last we discussed this, I had a chance to connect with Beecher, who's really been doing the front legwork on this. And it is going to be, I think the draft is due this month at any point, any day now, basically. And it is going to be another, I think they called it a month or two until it goes online, after we return the draft.
Right.
You know, so.
And then we'll get printed copies after that. Obviously, I think electronic copy is quicker.
Yeah, I would think so.
In the contract, we ordered six. Something or whatever. There's a printed element, I think, to the contract.
Okay.
Doesn't matter. I want a printed version.
Yes, certainly. Yeah. I'll provide you with the draft as soon as it comes in.
Excellent.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Okay, sir.
Department of Business, Public Works.
Trustee Jean Bay.
Yes.
Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Commissioners. How are you doing?
Great.
This is a joint project with the Grants Pass School District. We are completing the sidewalks around South Middle School on West Harbeck.
The completion would be on the...
On the east, ones, on the school
on,
side.
On school. Oh, on the school side. Okay.
School side.
Okay.
Yeah. We received two bids. They were about $10,000 apart. Copeland Paving... was a little bit, $153,497. The other contractor, Copeland Sand and Gravel, was $163,251. So this contract is to award the Copeland Paving, the contract to do that portion of the work.
Great.
Good. And it was Copeland Paving and Copeland...
Sand and Gravel.
Sand and Gravel.
Copeland Paving is Bobby.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Coal from Sand and Gravel is Steve.
Yes.
It's good stuff.
Good familiar discussion.
It's just, I'm going to say it, a little funny how the families potentially, you know, who knows what the actual cost, you know, it's probably right there around 160. So I know they don't talk to each other. They don't talk to each other about anything. They don't. Yeah. Collaborate on this.
Yeah. So that's, and you, that's reasonable for you and
yes,
what you anticipated?
It's actually, it's under our budgeted amount. So
okay.
One was about 4,000 over, one was 4,000 under, roughly.
Mm. Yeah, it scoped really well, which reinforces our ability to scope stuff at actual costs, we hope.
Or we got lucky.
Or we got lucky. Well, that happened. Well, that's great. You said this was in partnership. What is this all being paid for? How is this all being paid for? What do you know what the
school? I don't know the exact split. The school district is basically doing all the film work, everything from the sidewalk back to the school,
mm-hmm.
and then we're doing from the sidewalk out.
Great. And if this is in progress to reverting this or converting this road, not reverting it, converting it over to a city thoroughfare?
Yeah, we'll have to do the other side as well.
Yes. Yes. Eventually this will be a jurisdictional exchange.
Yeah.
Okay, excellent. Some step in the right direction, no pun intended.
Oh, good.
This is great. Thanks.
Thank you, sir.
All right. We didn't use Safe Routes to Schools money for this.
No.
It wouldn't have qualified. Or it's just really challenging to get to
it's challenging. You have to do a lot of surveys through the school with all the parents, and the timelines just never seem to work well for us.
Yeah. Okay.
That's one of the aggravating things to me is there are so many stipulations on how you have what you have to do to in order to access these monies and that kind of thing. It just makes it impossible to comply or reasonable.
The need is so great.
Sure.
You know, and you've got what I would think a cookie cutter should apply.
Yeah.
It's right next to a middle school.
Yeah.
How is there not sidewalks there to let the kids at least one side of the street get to and from safely? Because there's a lot of people that. A lot of kids that walk to school there.
Mm. The cars come down are so slow anyway.
That's great. Good to see
Getting done.
Completion time on that before school starts in
we're hoping.
Oh, that'd be good. That'd be great.
That would be really great.
Be encouraging to the school or the students.
That's what the school district keeps asking.
Yeah, so. No, I know that would be their concern to get that done before.
When the mob arrives.
Yeah.
Okay.
All right. Good deal. Thank you.
So, do we need to be here next one?
No,
I
don't. No. Okay.
Consents or admins?
This is
this should be an admin, I mean, because it's a new contract.
But it's a budgeted event, so.
Roger.
Yeah. That's, I think a change in policy or a change in budget. This isn't a change in budget. So, for me,
I
could do this.
Is this a change in budget, or we can stretch the road band that far?
It was within $4,000.
And I don't think of, you know, from growth or anything.
Yeah.
Forest receipts.
I'm comfortable with the consent.
You're not picking scabs on it. So let's just do this in a consent. We'll all agree.
Great.
It's wonderful, Chuck. Thank you. Human resources on quarterly updates.
Hey there. Good morning, commissioners.
Good morning.
All right, I have a handful of things to just kind of go over. What's been going on and what's projecting to go on in the months to come. So first off, I had been coordinating with the courts to conduct a evacuation drill, and about a week before we decided to do it, we had a real evacuation event. So the timing was
kind of... You missed that.
I did. Exactly. We're going to have to do another one.
Oh, yeah.
This makes...
Yeah. Well, and I was actually surprised that it went as well as it did, because we haven't had one in overly long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
There were a few concerns from my perspective, primarily dealing with coordination between both the courts and the county who were out in the parking lot and coordinating with the first responders. Actually, Commissioner Walker had to go seek them out to go, what's the timeline? They never actually came to us. So
the responders never
came over and said, hey, here's when you can enter back in, here's the projected timeline. So we eventually got that, but it was not ideal.
Okay.
So room for improvement. We'll address some of that. The courthouse safety committee meets quarterly. So both the drafted policy change. I've just been added to it. You have Ryan, you have Jenny Hall, you have
Kirk's
in it, the judge is in it, and then someone from GP
public safety
is there. So there's a number of folks there. And actually, I spoke with Kirk about, we've been working on revising our evacuation policy.
Judge Baker's on that?
I believe so.
I think she is by extension of Kirk being there, but she personally is going to appear to those.
I don't know. But we actually,
because from a facility standpoint, if you're going to have the chief judge, you should have the facilities liaison from the board.
Mm-hmm.
I don't need to be there if Ryan's there and you're there if Judge Baker isn't there. But from a policy standpoint of gravity, where are we going with the card lock system at the county? Is that a priority of the board? It's a priority of mine just from a standpoint of having access. In an emergency event, Commissioner Walker ought to be able to go with her castle key to any door at any time and not have to carry around the castle, the dungeon keys, to try to get into somewhere. Those kinds of things in an emergency situation, for me, let's put some dollars to that to make that happen, or apply to the state if they have some.
Well, and also, from the first responder standpoint, it improves their efficiency of being able to access different places.
Right.
Our current policy says we lock everything down, which means the first responders have to hope they have the right key.
Yeah.
And, in talking with UP Public Safety, they don't always. And so, we've finalized the revision of the policy from our standpoint, from Sheriff's Department, and from PD, but by statute, it actually is required to go through that committee. So I was ready to move forward, and Kurt's like, no, we can't until we get to this committee.
Yeah.
And I was like, so the next meeting is in September, unfortunately, so that's the soonest that we can finalize and move forward with the policy revision. But anyway, it's good to actually have an actual event where we can say, had hands-on, here's some...
We learned some stuff.
Yeah. So,
I want to insert myself somewhere. I do have an interest in this. I've, been following it, I think, since I've been on. But I think it does make sense from a facilities liaison standpoint, if that makes sense to you, just to be in the loop on those kinds of things.
Yeah.
And that we get the report after the September meeting.
Yes.
All things considered, it was, as you mentioned, it went pretty well.
Yes.
Yeah, by the time everybody realizes that sound, that's the sound we're listening for now, instead of whatever sound.
Well, and what's going to happen?
Get out of town.
What's going to happen in the future is it'll be much clearer, because the intention is to only have two sounds.
Yeah.
Fire alarm, which will be the response, whether it's a bomb threat or a fire or a gas leak or any response is, we're supposed to get out of the building because there's a threat in the building. And the secondary alarm is for active shooter. Because now there's three alarms, and that's one of the things that I noticed is people were confused. Well, which one does this mean? Is this the bomb threat or is this fire? I'm not sure. And
I couldn't pick up any of the lineup right now.
Yeah.
But if you hear the fire alarm,
installing it.
The fire alarm, at least on this side, is so loud it will drive you out of the building.
Yeah.
And actually what I'd like to talk to the courts about is, it makes sense to me, they have the old school fire alarms, which is a bell with a hammer making that sound. The one we have on this side is better. It's louder. It is designed to drive you out of the building. You will not stay here unless you happen to be deaf, and if you do, you will soon be deaf.
Or deafer.
I think it would be a good expense of money, both in the justice building or the juvenile justice building, because they have the old school bell sound as well. What we have on this side of the courts and county building is better.
Okay.
It has the strobe light flashes and a louder, obvious fire alarm sound.
Great.
So, the other thing with the coordination with the courts, I've been chatting with Kurt about the challenges of coordinating potential threats either to the courts or to the county. We've had a few instances in the last few months of threats, and that we haven't had great communication between one side or the other, or sometimes both. And so we're going to also at that meeting discuss what's the best methodology to make that communication better, so that if there's a threat, all relevant parties are notified so they know hey, here's what's going on. The next thing I have is I'm in the process of looking over the administrative policies from risk management and HR. It'll be a bit of a process to get those finalized because it's just by nature those take forever. So even after I have recommended revisions, it takes a few months to get all the official approvals through. But I'll have that to the board in the next couple of weeks. A few things with OEB. OEB is working on finalizing an RFP to see who our medical provider will be for next year. Currently it's Moda. It very well may be next year as well. But they've released the RFP. Everyone on the OEB board is going to be scoring the responses, and we're actually not looking forward to it because the consultants we have that are working with us have estimated a between 50 and 100 hours it's going to take to go through and score them.
Holy
mackerel. Yeah, so it's just, I'm hoping on the 50 instead of 100. We'll see. Depends on how many responses we get, but that'll be a big project in the next couple of months. The final determination will happen in December between, you know, we'll score them and then bring the finalists in for interviews, and so it'll be a bit of a process, but we'll see who the new providers will be next year. There's also an administrative rule change that's been fairly controversial where OEB is looking to institute a $100 fee per person who opts out of insurance. And it's been super controversial in the school districts. Because they have, some of the school districts have 30 to 40% of their staff opt out of insurance. And so they're looking at $100 per month per person. It's a pretty sizable.
Oh, not just a one-time charge.
No, per month.
Oh, that's a crime.
And the reasons for that is
money.
Well, the people who opt out tend to be younger than the people who stay in. And when you have a bunch of people opt out, you have an older pool. Older pools use insurance more, and it drives up the rates. So basically you have entities that have a lot of people who opt out, and they're taking advantage of the system, and all the other folks that don't have a lot of people that opt out are supplementing them. And it's, you know, the goal of OEB as a whole is to keep the rates as low as possible. And so it's fairly controversial. There's been a lot of back and forth debate. It won't actually affect Josephine County because they've decided to only charge the fee to entities that have a percentage above initially 20%. I'm hoping, I'm actually advocating to, over a period of time, to lower it down to 10%. We're currently at 3%. We have rules in place that it will limit the number of folks that opt out. We only offer it for non-union. The unions don't even have it available, so it's really a non-issue for our county. But some of the school districts have a lot of folks that opt out. So that's pretty controversial, but we're moving forward on that.
So. I don't think it would.
That's reflect accurate. I mean, if the rates are higher, it's reflecting the cost of service.
They're projecting. The big thing is that more and more are opting out every year. Mm-hmm. That's a growing trend. And they projected that those opt-outs have cost the pool as a whole 2% in rates, which is pretty substantial. The primary reason why more people are opting out is in the school districts, their classified staff don't make anything. I mean, they're making 10, 12 bucks an hour. And they offer insurance for people that are 20 hours. So you're having someone making 10 bucks an hour, only working 20 hours a week. Even at a lower cost, they just can't afford it. So they opt out because they have group coverage through their spouse or something.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just costs of insurance across the board have risen to the point where a lot of the classified staff, if they have any other option, they'll opt out because they don't. It's just cost prohibitive. So that's the primary genesis of what's causing it, in my opinion. But it's, you know, there's a challenge to figure out how to fix it.
Well, I really appreciate that you're on this board and, you know, reflecting the needs of Josephine County. Even though specifically on this one we may not be affected, but just that there's somebody who's interested in the nuances of this, that world, it's fantastic, and I appreciate you being on that.
Well, I was kind of laughing. There's two members currently that represent local government, one from management, one from the union, and we're always, you know, haranguing the rest of the board, like, well, what about local government needs? Because, you know, it's Oregon Educators Benefit Board, so they're kind of educator-centric. You know, the last OEB update is, so we have a plan that's called the Bronze Plan. The entire purpose of the plan is not really that people are even going to use it, but the ACA has a mandate that you're required to offer insurance to anyone who qualifies. And it has a secondary mandate that says that insurance needs to be affordable. Well, the bronze plan doesn't meet that second mandate. So there's potentially fees associated or charges associated with it not being affordable. But the big charge is that you don't offer it. So if you don't offer a plan to people who qualify, what happens is the IRS will charge the entity a $2,000 fee per every single employee you have.
Okay.
Yeah. So that's.
So how do you determine affordability?
They determine affordability based upon an employee. It's actually fairly complex. An employee's total income, the amount that they have to pay for the plan, cannot exceed 9.5% of their total income. However, us as an employer often can't determine the total income because we only know what they pay. They may have other jobs. And so the way that we have determined to cover ourselves is, well, 9.5% of the income that we know about, which is our income to them. And the bronze plan is more expensive than that. So there's a potential fee, but it's pretty nominal. That fee is just a fee to make up the difference, basically. So I have three employees that elected to take the plan. It's not affordable. The difference in what we're charging them and what it would take to be affordable just for those employees is what the fee would be. So we're talking a few thousand bucks for the whole year if anyone takes it and if it's not affordable. So that's the worst case scenario. The worst case scenario on the other fee is a few hundred thousand dollars, which is pretty substantial. So that's why we've offered the bronze plan to protect against the first big fee. So that's, you know, we're still working on that to see if there's a way to change the rules potentially.
The first job of the commissioner is marginalizing liability.
Yeah. So
you have no control over it.
That's all you can do.
And you have no control over this liability.
Right.
I mean, because you're not setting any rates for it. You're all saying,
just get the bronze plan.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
Doing the best.
And it's, sure. So we've talked as a board about, you know, almost no one elects to select that plan because it's expensive. But it's still a good tool to protect against the liability of the ACA. So, next is a Department of Labor update. So they've had an update on the overtime rule. So basically, it's a lot of people who currently qualify for exempt are no longer going to qualify for exempt because the dollar threshold for that qualification is going from about $23,000 a year up to $47,700 a year, which is a substantial increase. For our county, it will have a nominal effect. I have a plan of action to address that. I don't actually think that this is the last word. The Department of Labor said it's the last word, but I don't believe them at this point in time. I think there's going to be some litigation. So I am electing not to make any changes until right before the deadline, because I think there's going to be litigation. I don't want to make changes and have to change again. So.
For the last word.
Well, the deadline is December 1st. That's when it goes live. Yeah. So in November, we'll institute whatever changes are necessary. But I think it's likely that there's going to be some litigation over this that will push that out. So I don't think the last word has been said, but we'll see. For us, it doesn't have a huge effect, but you go to Mississippi where the average wage is really low. $47,000 is a lot of money in Mississippi. So it'll have a much bigger effect there. Also, the next legislative changes, the minimum wage has gone up as of a few days ago. This year, it will not affect the county at all. Our lowest paid employee is just slightly above that minimum wage. Next year, at this time, it'll have a nominal effect. It'll be two or three positions that'll be affected. And then the following year after that, whatever effects will go into the next collective bargaining agreement with AFSCME. That's the only union currently that has employees that will be affected by the minimum wage increase. By the time
evaluation of the direct hard costs to the county, there could be input costs on other services, you know, things that we purchase or rely on.
Yeah.
Those costs could increase.
Absolutely.
Substantially.
So, but the initial costs associated with collective bargaining and the employee costs, at least in year one, it will have no effect, and in year two, a nominal effect.
Okay.
So. There's been a couple changes that aren't actually the legislative changes, but they've been the EEOC, Equal Employment Commission, is the who holds people accountable if you are in violation of FMLA or ADA rules. And they've made a couple updates that are kind of a big change from how we've looked at it. The first one is when someone goes out on workers' comp, or not workers' comp, they go out on FMLA leave, so they're injured outside of work. We've kind of had a standard practice of I require a full work release from your doctor before I let you come back. And that protects us so that your non-work-related injury won't become a work-related injury. And so that's been our mostly standardized policy. Well, the EEOC came out with a ruling that said that potentially might be in violation of the ADA. So because you have a potential disability because you had an injury, and the ADA in 2004 expanded to make it to where almost everything qualifies as an ADA event. So we have to rethink that policy and look at each individual case on an individual basis and see if potentially we might have to grant them the ability to come back to work with accommodation. So each individual case is now a separate thing that we have to look at it instead of having a blanket policy. The blanket policy is a potential violation. So that's a pretty pretty substantial change with how we have to look at FMLA cases. Similarly, I've looked at instituting a potential...
And it's not a law, it's a recommendation of interpretation, potentially. It hasn't been refined by...
The law is the same,
yes.
But the EEOC occasionally comes out with what they call opinion letters.
Right.
This is how we're going to enforce the law.
Right.
And so they're saying this is how we're going to enforce the ADA.
They're going to try to enforce it until it's actually litigated.
Yeah.
It's really not a practice that's defined.
Yeah.
It's a one-and-a-half-to...
Well, it's just because we look at each individual case separately doesn't mean we have to bring them back. A good example is I have a road worker that gets hurt outside of work. The minimum qualifications to be a road worker is this, this, and this. If they can't do this, I can't give them reasonable accommodation. They have to be able to lift 50 pounds to do the job, period. If they can't, I don't have to allow them to come back because we have to provide reasonable accommodation. The definition of that under ADA is a bit amorphous, but it doesn't mean I'm required to bring him back and create a new job for him and give him light duty. I don't have to do any of that. I just have to have an interactive process, consider whether reasonable accommodations have to be met.
Mm-hmm.
It just makes the process more complex than it was
right.
a month ago.
Right. Okay.
So, I've considered looking at seeing if the board is interested in adopting a policy of post-accident drug testing, primarily with vehicle accidents. And the EEOC actually came out with another determination on how they're going to enforce that, where they are saying it's not illegal, but they advise not having policies where you have standardized drug testing regardless of the particulars of the case. They only want to see drug testing if there's potential reasonable suspicion that drugs were a result of the act or a potential cause of the accident. And the rationale for that was having policies like that make it so that people don't want to report injuries. And so they think that it's not a violation of the ADA, but it's a potential violation of some OSHA rules, the way they're interpreting it. So, although I was considering instituting that policy, I don't think it's a good idea anymore because of that. So, each individual case again.
Darn if you do and darn if you don't. Because if you blanket apply it, then you're not trying to look for the specifics of the case. You really don't care. You had an accident. Let's just do this just so everybody's covered. No big deal. Oh, but wait. If we do that, then we're violating the OSHA element of looking for, I don't know, it just seems ridiculous. You can't win.
Yeah, I agree.
Frustration of the inmates running the asylum.
I think so, yeah. But they found that, and I can actually attest to this working in retail grocery. In that industry, we had a standard policy. Anyone gets hurt, no matter how big or how small, we drug test you, period. And there were people that would never report an injury because they were smoking pot, and if they got caught, they'd get fired. So unless they absolutely had to, they would never report an injury. And so that's the genesis of saying they don't want blanket policies because, OSHA's perspective is people need to know about...
Somebody who's doing dope on the side.
Yeah. Well, their perspective is they want to make sure that people are reporting injuries, and they don't want policies that will inhibit people's willingness to report injuries. I mean, from my perspective, if there's smoking pot on the side, you're fired. But I don't work for OSHA.
When does the middle ground of common sense come to play?
I missed that. You got to enjoy it. Now, a litigious society is ruining
middle
ground.
Yeah.
That's all it is.
Yeah. And that's where you look at the big picture and you see this whole movement of society coming to this point of...
The one good news is it's great job security for me.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, yeah, they're just sitting around thinking up
ways to screw us.
Implement policies that tomorrow they're going to disagree with and find a reason to.
Yeah. Some good news.
Oh, please.
Good news. So Timekeeper Plus has moved forward. We're officially live. Finance and HR has done a great job. It's mostly Sandy, mm-hmm. Carlton, and Cecilia, so I'd love to take credit, but I did not do it. Those three did a great job.
Doing crazy work.
And they've trained every single department, and then on a weekly basis for probably the next couple of months, they're going to go through each department and walk them through the steps on how to get people paid properly. A really eye-opening thing has occurred through this process, and in training people, we found that in every training session, at least one person would ask a question, oh, what about this situation? And we had to go, well, you're not allowed to do that. That's against the union contract.
Oh.
And either from both management and employees, we're doing things that when you're just filling out pieces of paper, you don't notice that it's wrong.
Right.
And so this is a great way to ensure that we're following both state law and union contract, which from both employee and management in a number of departments around the county, they weren't doing. And it wasn't big, massive, egregious things, but it was just, but it was clear that a lot of things were not done correctly. And
certainly the workers in finance, they have certainly done a great job of making sure that everybody understands, everybody is on the same page, and we're not going to cram this down. We're going to work with you to see it come about. It's going to come about, but how it's going to come about, I think they've done a real masterful job in that whole process.
But the county is a tough system to institute this type of program because we have such a diverse workforce, and what works in the assessor's office may not work in a clerk's office, may not work in public works. They're all different. But this system allows great diversity of process, so it's been a great learning experience both from our standpoint and the employees, and it'll all work out and allow us to more accurately follow the law. So I think it'll be good. I commend
the specifics that are reflected in the timekeeping relative to the union contracts, breaks and how they're accounted for, and lunch flexibility and that stuff is amazing. I don't want to be disparaging, but the unions wanted that, and now you're having to live by because it's electronically captured. You're doing what you said you wanted and you're agreed to. That just sounds like a terrible way to have a break and take a lunch. And, that doesn't sound fun at all. But so be it.
Yeah. So it is. It has been very interesting to learn where some of the holes were in our previous timekeeping system that you just don't notice until you are. When you actually account for every minute, you're like, oh, wow, we're not doing this and this and this.
Yeah.
And it's going to make us more accurate and more compliant with the law. So it's
good deal.
Yep.
But move onward and upward.
The last thing I have is that I just completed this year's renewal for workers' comp and liability insurance. We do have one little hang-up with it. We're kind of going back and forth on the Harvard Plus property. Our insurance has some concerns on how we've evaluated that property, so we're kind of working with the assessor's office and helping out. And they're just questioning, why did you come up with that dollar amount? We think it might be higher. So that's the last little bugaboo, I guess, on the renewals. But they've all been submitted, so we're good for another year.
Great.
Good.
So,
okay.
That's all I have.
You're a good man. Thank you, sir.
How's the consolidation? I didn't afford, forgive me if I don't remember, putting building and safety under the community and economic development / planning department.
So what's going on with that? The board has said that they would like to do it, but they haven't officially done it. You have to do it via board order. And so I've chatted with with Julie, and really what should happen, and is going to happen probably, I'm imagining, in the next week or two, is Julie's going to meet with the board on a Tuesday general discussion to discuss this is what it'll look like. And so when the board order is drafted, it's going to be more accurate on exactly what it is. The plan is to have community development as an umbrella department, and within that, there's going to be three divisions, building safety, planning, and economic development.
So the board actually hasn't discussed that component of economic development going underneath, leaving finance and going underneath. It makes perfect sense to me. I endorse the idea. Arthur and I have chatted about it, or at least he brought me up to speed. I shouldn't say the board hasn't discussed it because it wasn't here. Maybe you guys did, but I haven't.
Well, we've discussed it in the move towards creating a community development, but they haven't officially moved that.
Yeah.
It's not official until it's official.
Right.
And so the board has to draft an order. Either legal or the board will draft an order making it official. But really the particulars of what it'll look like need to be discussed and figured out before that is drafted. And so for now we have an interim.
In favor of all of that, but it does, if that is required, this is a question, I guess, for us to move forward on the recruiting element of the person we'd like to have as that permanent commercial inspector. Maybe that's the building official by the county, because it isn't going to be Julie.
Mm-hmm.
You know, who is that? Filling those roles, making those happen, waiting 2 weeks to get an order to codify a decision. I think we've already, maybe the specifics haven't been worked out. But I don't want that to inhibit the recruiting process, because
It's not inhibited. I actually recruited for the term building official, not building safety director. The particulars of the job are almost the same regardless. The job description I've drafted for that, it pulls a little bit of the final decision-making process, because ultimately it will be the community development director's role to hire and fire, but the building safety will have supervisory.
That directorship into you're the building official.
Yeah.
But you aren't the director of the program.
Yeah. And that's basic. But most of the job, especially with that job, is it's a working director. It's a prototypical working director. So 90-95% of the job is the same.
Right.
So we're recruiting for a building official. We are also recruiting for a commercial inspector because we have an internal candidate who might be the best pick. And if he is the best pick for the building official, we'll need to replace another inspector position, which will be a commercial inspector. So we're getting apps for both. We've actually had some good apps. When it comes to the actual hiring, whether Julie wants to do that and have a panel or the board wants to do that, I don't know yet, because technically it isn't Julie's position, but we're receiving apps. The position had first review yesterday, I believe, so we're pulling all the apps in, and we'll have a list of good applicants here in the next day or so. So we're going to move forward even... we're going to replace that position, whether it is ultimately reporting to Julie or reporting to the board. It'll still be this, the same person.
I think the order is just going to codify a position the board already has.
Yeah.
That position is going to report to Julie.
Yeah.
But I think it makes a lot of sense in this transitional time, because this is one of those moves that is great, but it's all precipitated on the fact that our director left.
Mm-hmm.
And if that doesn't work out, if for some reason, Julie's got a lot on her plate right now with developing a community and economic development arm of that program, if it has to revert back to, because it's not broken,
mm-hmm.
the way it is under Mr. Rice, worked just fine. And as you said, a working director picking up those directorship responsibilities of oversight of staff and whatever has to revert, that person would report back to the board if it referred.
Yeah.
I'm interested in being on that panel of the building and safety department, and we'll probably continue just to make sure that this is all shepherded well for the next year. That makes sense to me. I don't know what the board feels about.
This has been part of the fly in the ointment as far as Roberts. All that he did so well, mm-hmm. is part of the problem. now what do you do?
We're not solving a problem. You're right.
And that's part of the issue. And so there has to be a building what's it?
Official.
Building official.
It has to be a building official because that's a state mandated situation. Mm-hmm. So now, to whom does a building official report? Okay, now that's okay. But there's still this process questions, and I mean, Julie can't take on another hat of, I mean, she can be responsible, but not an actual operating of things.
No.
And that's all part of the...
Can't be a working official.
No, I mean, how do we work this thing out in an agreeable way, understandable way, that everybody is satisfied, but the job is being done. It's not just being ignored in some way. So.
Well, and at least the way I see it, you know, building official, that department has staff. The building official will still direct that staff. It's just final authority doesn't rely on that official as it is currently. Final authority relies on the community development director.
Yeah,
so on a day-to-day basis,
the whole benefit of doing this is so there's a coordinated effort mm-hmm. between planning and building and safety under the auspice of community development to get the job done.
Yes.
To get the project completed.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't stall. There isn't continuity between, well, we approved this at a building and safety, but it's in a flood zone, so you're not going to be able to build it anyway.
Yeah.
The engineering, everything solid, whatever. Oh, but you know that's not going to work zone wise. Everything would be flawlessly coordinated if it were that's philosophically under that community development. So it just needs to move forward.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're at a sticking point. I think we're at an attitude, I believe, of saying yes until we have a reason to say
right.
No.
Yeah, and that's,
we don't have a reason to say no yet. Other counties do it. Cities certainly do it.
Mm-hmm.
We can do it too.
But it might not be a reason to say no, but there's a reason to be screeching with the heels a little bit, saying, where are we going and how does this work?
Well,
that to me, that's the only problem of meshing this thing.
It's doable.
So it's doable, but how is it going to be done? And that to me is
well, and I think that's concern. The purpose of Julie coming in on a Tuesday meeting with the board and saying, this is my vision for how I think it would work.
Yeah, I think it's good.
And then based on that discussion, you go, great, let's make it happen.
Yep.
And then as it relates in the interim, you know, we're going to be hiring a building official in the next, you know, few weeks to month. So
great.
I think the board has said they intend to have it go under Julie. It's just, it's not official until it's official, but they can still move forward with it. So,
yeah. Okay. Anything else?
That's all I have.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Great.
We have the Fairgrounds.
Here we are.
Director, manager. Peggy.
Morning. Lots of things are happening. We had a successful 4th of July.
Oh, that's beautiful.
And we have lots of those, so if anybody wants
yeah,
more,
it's
we
great.
Certainly can update that.
Great.
Had a great 4th of July. I learned a lot that evening. It was very entertaining to watch the people. And without us, we partnered with the fellows and with the Chamber of Commerce. And this year they had not been able to raise an awful lot of money. So we didn't have a lot of other programs going on in the fairgrounds during that time. But that being said, I was a little bit surprised. I had trouble keeping none of the food vendors wanted to stay open because we didn't open the gates till 8:30. Well, the two that decided to stay open, the popcorn gentleman and then the pizza guy, actually did more business during that time period than they did at the horse races that day, which was kind of interesting. So needless to say, they were very, very thrilled. And so that gives us ammunition to go back to them for next year because we definitely could have had more food vendors open.
Yeah, maybe if there are food vendors, people are there a little earlier.
Right. Yeah, we said the gates open at 8:30. However, they were starting to trickle in at 7:00.
I would think so. Is the time.
Yeah, they were definitely there, and they didn't really seem distressed that we didn't have a lot of entertainment. You know, there was a lot of visiting that went on.
Yeah,
and it was really just a good wholesome piece. The only fly in the ointment, so to speak, that I saw was that we had in front of us on county property, and I'm going to be very honest with you, and I'm sorry I haven't visited with you about this completely, but one of our renters for the properties was definitely shooting off fireworks that probably were not appropriate. And I'm going to go talk to JJ. I've already signed an incident report, and I am going to talk to him about maybe that we send out when the YMCA parking lot, there was fireworks going on out there, and that is county property, and I believe that we have some kind of a ordinance or an order that says that there's no fireworks on county property, so other than licensed, which we were licensed to be doing. So that is probably the only thing that I really saw that went on that we need to address for next year. But all in all, it went really, really well.
Yeah.
Staff that was there did really good at being sure to water everything down. We had to move some panels from horse racing that were in the middle of the field because they just could not be in the way of the fireworks. You just wanted to keep your liability very much down. So
the other issue, shooting off order of fireworks, too, I think that will be addressed to those folks through the legal counsels.
Correct. I mean, with Wally, as soon as I get done here, to have that discussion, because it does need to be addressed.
Sure.
Anyway, but horse racing has had a great run.
Great.
They truly have had a great run. They've had record-breaking weekends. Every day when they go back against last year's is up. And they're looking for another great weekend this weekend because the weather's supposed to be good. And weather's a huge driver, just like fair.
Yeah.
I'm hoping we get the breaks that they've had as far as weather goes. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we'll just see how it goes. All in all, that has gone relatively well. You know, there's always things that we're just keeping notes for next year that we'd be sure that we all address up front so that there's no miscommunication. I don't want anything go on between us and them.
It's
a bad thing. You know, this is great for oh, absolutely. And our community really enjoys the horse racing piece of it.
You have new leadership at the horse races with Rod not being at the helm. And I don't know if that's... I'd say it's a loss because I think he's intimately knowledgeable. But he's not missing entirely. He's just not the guy.
No, he's not completely out there.
He's not the guy out front.
No, and they've had their challenges.
Yeah.
Let's just put it that way this year. And for them to have had those challenges and still be in a positive realm, that's a good thing. But there's been a lot of communication. We just are not available at every drop of the hat to go do things. We came up with a plan of how to work with them. So if they want to use something that I have, they have to. We have a plan in place of how they get charged to use. They don't use our equipment. My staff has to be there.
Right.
And I just can't have, I cannot absolutely have the equipment being torn up and damaged and liability that goes with it.
But that's not what they're paying for. They're paying to utilize the facility, not all of our equipment.
Oh, absolutely. It's not our event.
Exactly. They're a vendor like anybody else.
Well, and that's been, they still go back to, well, that isn't the way it's been for the last 50 years.
Oh,
it's been this way for 50. And I hear this all the time.
I know.
But this is a new day. This is your event.
This is your event.
And I'm very happy.
We want to help anyway. We can't
Absolutely.
Any other vendor.
And we're here.
But
we can't give anybody else
your event.
Correct. And we can't give anybody else special treatment.
No.
We can't. It's not fair to whoever else comes in, whether it's Rotary or...
You never realized that Commissioner Hare had that many relatives, though, did you?
No. No, same.
Whoever comes in and says, I'm Commissioner Hare's cousin.
No. Haven't had that at all. I have not had that at all. And truthfully, we appreciate that it's your cousin, but we have to treat it all the same. We have to be
the same. Well, I
don't get... I know.
Yeah.
No. No, nobody's asked.
I pay double.
That's been really
weird. Your Commissioner Hare will
charge you. Absolutely. BMX.
Yeah.
Update on BMX. The contract is in their hands, and I believe they had a board meeting last night.
Good.
I talked to Mike Watson, and then I had talked to Jody a couple days ago when she had dropped off her rent check, and she indicated that they were signing last night.
Yeah.
So everything, as far as I know, everything's smoothly going forward. They're still running. And they've been told to continue to run until it's time to move them.
Yep.
If they can safely do that, and that's what they're doing. So, and that's been a real win-win. I know that there's been a little bit of strife because of rent amounts, but you have to look at the whole picture.
Sure.
And this is a community event, and we have to look at what's best for the community. So
I think it's going to be hugely positive.
Oh, I think
for everybody.
Well, and when
we went through that as a process, I think it's a testament to the people involved. And the diligence, everybody I think it could have gone really south. And
it could have.
I think, frankly, that is the example of how Food and Friends could have gone this way. And the players are the same. We acted the same way policy-wise of trying to put the right people in the room
putting the bookends out there and getting a solution. And I you know, to say that we were at fault for any one of the other ones, really, because this one went pretty well, and the next one will probably go pretty mm-hmm. well, and it's just the way we do it. So, anyway.
It could be the same with horse racing, too, just so you know.
Yep.
I mean, it could be about the
fault. Well, it actually is. I mean, to do that 50-year precedent transition to where they're paying, you know, $18,000 and all of that, they never had to do that before, but it worked out well. It's working out.
It is working. So. It's still there, and I don't. We don't rent it.
Yeah.
So it's worked out really well.
Yeah.
Fair things, fair updates. I'm happy to say that last year we had a. Last year we had about $18,000 worth of sponsorships. This year we're at 36.
Great.
So we've exactly doubled that. So far we've had 5,000 in. From Wheeler, we still have another 15 coming between Toyota and Wheeler. They're sharing that load this year as the title sponsor. We made a title sponsor this year, and they stepped to the plate, came up on their donation for their sponsorship for the fair.
We're buying a 100 by 60 foot tarp we could put on top of the arena.
Oh, not yet. Not yet. I was a little excited
for 120 by 60.
So, anyway, not at this point. So, I'm feeling good about that. I'm headed up to Canyonville and speaking with Seven Feathers. I just need to continually be in front of them. I know that they've got money. I know that they're out in the community.
Mm-hmm.
They're on both sides of me, very, very large. Got a phone call today that Medford's looking to expand their electronic message board as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I know that Seven Feathers is involved in that. So I think the more I'm in front of the key management,
right,
not just the local office, in front of the key players, and on the 14th I'll be up there.
Of July. I had dinner with their board director last year. They reached out to me and wanted to meet with local elected officials, and I think they're continuing to do that. I had one other invitation. I wasn't able to make it. We had a great... dinner was about 3 hours or something like that, and just as an opportunity to engage with local electeds talking about issues in the community where they saw things going and figuring out how they could best partner. I've got his name in there, him and his wife and stuff, and just, you know, it was a really good meeting, and I it's my fault for not following up with them personally and trying to reach out specifically on the fairgrounds thing. But I think engaging with Josephine County in general, not just, you know, limiting it to the fairgrounds, could be parks,
right,
could be other things. You know, where is it they're interested in being? I think the reader board makes a whole lot of sense from a partnership. There's 30,000 people that utilize 199 on a daily
mm-hmm.
basis.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you going to get that kind of frontage advertising? ODOT endorsed already, you know, it's ready to go.
Well, I'm going to have that basic discussion with them on the 14th. I had started through the local offices where I was directed, and I think that that's kind of where we had been.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went to the Travel Southern Oregon Conference, best thing I ever did, I happened to sit next to the advertising manager.
Mm-hmm.
It was incredible.
Great.
And on the bus coming back, and I just happened to visit with her about who I knew my contact was. Mm-hmm. Next morning I had my contacts, card, everything
ready
to go from the advertising manager.
Good.
And those are the kinds of things that I think are really important for us as county employees to be able to continue to do, because we still need to network.
Yep.
When I was there.
You think?
It's huge. I was over to Gold Beach last weekend
mm-hmm.
and met someone that I'd met at that conference at Jerry's jet boat, mailboat,
right,
travels that went up the river. So, I mean, these are just things that if you don't go to these things, you don't see them.
Right.
And I know it's an expense, but you can't leverage that.
Yeah.
And the tourism committee has talked to me from here. I've been to two meetings with Mary on that. She's still on there. I think that her term ends sometime next year, and they've already asked me if I'd be willing to step in there. So, you know, we're looking at that. So anyway, things are going well with the fair. A couple new budget lines. I'm excited about the new budget lines that Arthur was very nice to put together for me, because we were able to break some things out especially like sponsorship dollars. I think that that's really important. That is an area where I know we can grow, and that I don't think we've been able to tap because we've been so busy staying alive. And it's so nice to be able to have Mary and that group doing working on the grant piece of it, so that I can go out and find sponsorship dollars as well as working with all the sponsors and that mm-hmm. type of thing. So that's been huge. Grants for continuing to work on electronic message board. Arthur, we have talked in depth with Arthur. We've talked to Baum, Commissioner Heck, about that electronic message board, and we're moving forward on that to be able to borrow some money from the property reserve and being able to pay that back. And we've gone after Pacific Power for their foundation for $10,000, and then economic development, and we've asked some area partners already to help for some donations. We've talked to the Posse already about it, and last night I was actually at a meeting with the Posse. And we've talked to, I've actually talked to 4-H. I would love to see a partnership with 4-H in the funding piece of it, mm-hmm. because I know that they do have some money. And then we talked to the Winter Growers Market as well, because they've been a really good community partner. So that's moving forward.
That really went well, the winter use of the building for the winter market.
It went hugely well.
Certainly the promotion of that would be, I don't know if I've seen a whole lot of how well it went or what the expectations are for this next year or whatever, but it would certainly be something that, you know, to blow that horn a little louder.
Well, and they didn't come in until December.
Yeah.
And then they left right after February, and for this year moving forward, they've all given me indication that they will come in November. And leave in middle of March.
Yeah, because so, here closing down the first Tuesday or Saturday in November, I think. They run up. I mean, so that would be a good segue just for the.
Well, and the growers truly have time now to grow things for the wintertime, whereas the first year they did it every other week.
Mm-hmm.
The growers didn't have their crops in time on the rotated mm-hmm. basis, so now that's moving forward. So it went really, really well this last year.
Yeah.
So we've got that going, and then this month, instead of a regular fair board meeting, I've asked for a work session where we can actually walk through the fairgrounds. I think we need to be sure that we're looking at risk management very carefully. We need to see if we've got any pieces that we can be liable, but we see before fair happens. So we're going to do a boots on the ground walking through the fairgrounds.
Facade. I saw that it's off on the.
It is off on the commercial building.
Is it going to make it?
Ryan says it is. Brian says it is. Once they got underneath that facade, it looked way better than what they had expected see it underneath.
Good.
It.
Yeah.
You might want to drive past because it looks really pretty good, especially on the east side of it.
Structurally. They just slapped on that other thing
mm-hmm.
quick. They didn't remove any of the original.
Nope, they didn't. And my recommendation to Ryan truly is let's look at some of the windows that are in that building, because if they unpainted some of those windows or put decent windows in that building, it would lighten up that whole building. It would make it much more usable, and it wouldn't be such like a cave inside.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we fix the windows, we fix the outside, we fix the floor. That becomes a really viable building to use year-round. Mm-hmm. Whereas right now, it's got heat in it, but it doesn't have air in it. So, and the way it's configured with the different arms, it's great for auctions and things like that, but some things it isn't so usable for.
I guess it was designed for boxing?
I don't know.
Yeah,
was that was it?
I don't know.
Way back when?
Yeah, because it has the different wings, the ball is square in the middle. I think that's what it was designed for.
Well, boxing, and then the other thing would be an auction.
Yeah.
I mean, what a great place for an auction, because you can see it mm-hmm. from all that. So we got boots on the ground. We're going to do some different things next year. I've really hesitated. They've been very successful for the last 3 years, and I'm smart enough to understand that we really don't want to go in there and completely change everything, what everybody's done. So, you know, we're doing it in baby steps.
Yeah.
But there's some things that we need to do better. But I think that the previous team has done a great job to be where they're at. So I'm a little cautious of changing an awful lot. I'd like to see some kind of a barbecue contest next year.
I think fun.
Maybe work with Rotary on that. That would be something I think that would be extremely fun.
Give me the judges.
Absolutely. Judges are fun. And then I think last but least, it's not on this list, is I'm meeting with Soil and Water District today. We're just going to do a debrief on the fire gardens that are along the Midway. If you haven't been there, you might want to go look at them. They look really good.
Yeah.
And they've still got some little, they need to put some little identifiers in the gardens. But all in all, I'm going to give them a certificate of appreciation today from us, just because they've done a really, really good job.
Yeah, they look fantastic. I was up there yesterday.
So things are looking good. We're ready for fair. Sir Francis Pass came in. We had about 35 to 40 volunteers that were there for most of the day. They got some really ugly stuff done that we haven't been able to be done. Like behind the shop where all the blackberries have grown up for years and years, and the rabbit barns, and that whole back area, I think, of, you know, hasn't come to the forefront. So we've really got that cleaned out. So,
the question is, the great news is that you ended June 30th with a positive balance.
I did. Yeah. I'll see what Arthur is going to do to me by the time he does the adjustments, but we're in the black. And our sponsorship dollars, I've only taken in 5,000 of it in the fiscal year, so we still have 30 some coming in for the year we just entered into.
This is a good improvement. So.
Oh, that's better than it was.
Yeah.
I'm still not happy, but it's better.
So good.
It looks good.
Thank you, ma'am.
Right. Thank you.
That means we wait now with bated breath for Mr. O'Hare.
I only have about 45 minutes for
it. That's great. We anticipated no less.
Let me a quick follow up on the fair and the property reserve and the sign. Is that I have a packet that I'll be putting on the agenda for next Thursday to bring it to the full board to look at this. But with the sign being a source of revenue, the payback, it's a traditional. We're traditional what we've done last couple of times to have just a nominal interest rate, 1%, and pay back the funds over a short period of time, since the sign has a great revenue stream associated with it.
Most people get theirs just done by a sponsor.
That is great. If she can get
resources, that has to be explored thoroughly.
If she can get some feathers,
I don't want to put a wet blanket on the proposal you guys are drafting up. But I mean, if you go to the schools or anywhere else, Pepsi, Coke. Those are the traditional ones. Pacific Power. I think the Seven Feathers would be a phenomenal one.
I don't think it's going to be in the running
not
for this one, but
it's not on a back street. It's not on a football field. It's not, you know, at Grants Pass High School that the only thing you see it for is football games and graduation. It's on 199, for goodness sake.
Mm-hmm.
It should not be. If it is. I don't get it.
Shouldn't be an issue.
I don't
all.
Get it.
Yeah.
That's not one we should leverage property reserve.
Don't need
to. Nothing else.
Yeah.
Stuff like what? You can't get a sponsor to pony up what it takes. You see these popping up, you know, the nice digital sign and stuff.
It doesn't seem like it would be that big of an issue, so I'm not sure why.
Yeah.
People
haven't tried.
Yeah.
I know.
And that issue has been addressed. And there have been the reluctance. When you get somebody who says it's only goes to $100,000 and we'll give you a free thing on the board, it has been because of the economic situation that people have swallowed twice and says, okay, we just want one. Well, one has been very hard. So you come up, then two, well, then you lose the whole idea if you get two. But that issue has been looked at as being addressed in that sense and possibly.
Since you first came on board, that was one of the first
issues
with
the
fairgrounds.
The only thing that I know that was explored was utilizing the existing sign and trying to retrofit it or whatever.
And that's done.
I think that's got to be scrapped.
They have to cut
off the steel top and say, all you're utilizing is the post.
I think there were, and we'll have to talk with Peggy, but I think there was something about utilizing the box, and if we didn't, then there was issues. Yeah. So we can, as long as we can keep it within the box, the existing framework of the sign, right, that that worked better. We didn't run afoul of
the idea of rehabbing the sign. That's gone. Because of all, it cost you much more to rehab it than to get it brand new.
And nobody supports those old.
Right.
But you're absolutely right. I'm not sure why there's any question as to a sponsorship of that sign. It seems like that would be golden.
I hate the intent of the property reserve being eroded by, if it isn't this is the only place to go for these funds. That's the only reason that those funds should ever be used, in my opinion, is that everything else is transport, and it's a have-to-have. It's not a like-to-have. We wish we had a new blah, blah, blah. Property reserve is so that you replace the Demick Tower roof, you know, and that's a have-to-have.
Right.
And
you just can't overlook that, can you?
What?
You just can't overlook that, can you?
No.
Okay. Well, everything else I bring
in. Borrow from the general fund ending balance reserve. There's no reason we don't do it from that. I mean, that's a much more loose, un-policy-driven thing, just from my standpoint.
Mm-hmm.
Property reserve is a reserve for property. Focus types of
building infrastructure, which the sign falls under that umbrella. Well, as far as the capital definition of capital and infrastructure,
but it's not a pipe, it's not a line for sewer, it's not a roof, it's not lights.
Yeah, there's two lights, a bunch of lights.
But as a fund of last resort, I think that's the key there.
And don't misunderstand that I don't want that sign fixed.
Right. Replaced and
replaced. Replaced.
Not fixed.
We're not fixed.
Everything else I have is just really just an update of projects that I've already talked about in prior weeks.
Great.
Where we're at. So unless there's something specific you want to hear, and we're going through end of year processes, you know, wrapping up the prior fiscal year, getting the new one started, rolling the balances forward, doing our accruals and our finals. In the middle of timesheets, as JJ mentioned, middle of travel policy, should have that one for you next week. I should have that one for you next week.
Great.
The library trust funds, met with Kate and Steve Swearinger, talking about the potential of getting those over to the Library Foundation. So that they can manage them and monitor them. The Mackenzie Trust will be next week. Dimmick, we're looking at the abatement and the market study, so that's another little project.
What was the Mackenzie that we were going to follow up? We were going to refine our positions on divesting that fund and giving it to a worthy cause. What was the assignment to each bring back our own? You know, I think you had one. Commissioner Walker had an organization to contribute to.
I don't think we've moved yet to the point of giving specific places where you want this money to go, because we're still talking about, can the money go, and are we going to be able to divest it, and can it divest in whole, or does some of it have to go certain places, and how much money are we talking about in that kind of stuff?
Okay.
Nobody has put in their fishing line yet. I mean, there's a lot.
I just wanted to make sure I wasn't supposed to come with my mind of St. Vincent's fall.
We figured you were down in Happy Hula Land down there, so you didn't care about it.
I care.
Talking to Raul.
Yeah.
So where did that come from? So what could happen? I mean, if you want to provide me with your thoughts, then I could compile that, you know, put it into a presentable format and bring it back to the board.
Are your questions answered? There's $85,000.
Yeah.
There are no family. I mean, you had mentioned, I think that's a question for me, is there somebody we can bounce off the idea, I mean, with the intent of going to the needy in Josephine County, and that, you know, going to the food bank is a 100% totally go-ahead? How do we check that out?
To me, that would be a legal question. That would be a Wally question, whether that complies with the intent or language. It's got to be very difficult to know what the intent is, though, since this has been a, you know, 40 years ago.
It's been so poorly used in the last 25 years, too. So.
I think it's written into the thing, and it's pretty clear.
Yeah.
It goes to the needy of Josephine County.
Right.
Who are, and what got to the needy in Josephine County.
Yeah.
Needy hungry, needy because you don't have a place to live.
Yeah.
You know, that kind of stuff. And, I mean, that's been my... I mean, I did run by legal counsel and talk to Arthur, too, but I'd love to see that Hearts of the Mission and their development of the underserved youth that are in legal limbo and that kind of stuff. And yes, that would qualify. So that's been sort of my cause celeb on that one. That I'd like to see some money go there. They're in that building program.
I echo youth.
Yeah.
I think that should be a priority for me. You start out with addressing that as the highest and best. And for however, is it housing, is it food, is it something to that effect? For me, kids going home hungry on the weekend is a top deal. They're provided food through school lunch programs. But the Boys and Girls Club sends home those backpacks and stuff. But I don't want to do, my only thing for the Hearts of the Mission is if, you know, if they're solid, if they're you know, they got the house, they got all these, that's the popular one right now. Maybe they're fine. They don't need another $85,000, but there's this program that nobody knows about that's doing great work over here in the shadows with another couple of $1,000. They're doing, you know, I don't know if that's Royal Family Kids or what it
is. Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and
I don't want to go just because that one's getting all the sparklers and fireworks.
You know, the sparklers and fireworks, though, sometimes they're just that, sparklers and fireworks, because then you go to put it on the ground.
Exactly.
And then you get a whole philosophical thing. You want to further support an organization that is simply stringing along, I'm using it in a pejorative way, stringing along the problem, because they have to, hang on, camera's not here, so praise God. We need to feed these folks because they're constantly hungry, they're going to be hungry. But we're not addressing the cause. Why are they always hungry?
Right.
And
we're on the same.
That's page. The thing I like about what Hearts of the Mission, they're trying to interdict this whole process.
I completely agree with you 110%. It's not a symptom.
And
that's where I'd love to go.
Yes, absolutely.
I'm entrusted with $85,000.
Yeah. Yeah. For
Let's
sure.
Do it an exponential.
Yeah.
Kind of a effect rather than.
However,
we have it scheduled for a general discussion on the 19th of this month.
Okay, good.
Okay. That's scheduled for the 19th? Mm-hmm. Okay, good. Good. That's part of general discussion. Do you want me to talk to Wally to say, can you give us some context or parameters? Or
I'm comfortable with, we'll find our own definition of needy. I don't need... No.
At this point, I mean, I cover bases.
We develop policy.
Yeah, and I cover the bases with a question that was stipulated in that.
Okay.
You can only do it for, okay, does that qualify as one of those four groups? Mm. Yes, it does. So.
Well, and I'm going to be a little bit more of a, we make that definition, not a legal definition.
Well, it's a legal definition.
It's an interpretation of the trust. Mm-hmm. Is he going to the dictionary and looking up the word needy? Is he looking to a state statute that defines the word needy? No, there is no state statute.
I guess it doesn't tie back.
It's our interpretation on a policy basis of what needy qualifies for. So it's not a legal. It has legal bearing, but we're the interpreters of that legal, in my opinion. Wally can have his opinion. But the three of us are the ones who are...
It's good to get as much information as one can.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
Okay, good. Good. So that's moving forward.
Auditor was something that came up when I was on vacation thinking about that. We've had Eisler. Nobody's a bigger champion of the work that they've done. Mm-hmm. Coming in at the 11th, you know, helping us out that one year that it went poorly. But... good, fiscally sound, responsible actions. Every 3 years, we need to at least investigate and look at. We haven't done that. Are you inclined to do that?
And I will do that, actually. So when the contract is up, you know, because we renewed their contract, this will be the third year their, again, their third year of their contract, this 2016 audit.
Okay.
So when their contract's up, then we'll go out.
Typically, January,
you go out early enough so that people can schedule you in. And make sure they finish up their audit.
There was a county that recommended an auditor, Eugene. Remember what it was?
Marina?
I get it. It's easy.
We usually publish, get touch base with everybody that's... So a lot of times there's also what I've heard talking with some of the other ones as to why didn't you bid. Is it depends on their own internal, you know, if they've got a full pallet for their crew that's assigned to Southern Oregon, then they're not going to bid, you know, or if they happen to say, hey, we can get Central Point and Joseph, you know, then they'll put something together. So,
that merits going out probably not too much past the end of August looking for an RFP.
For the auditor?
Yeah. So that contract is in the queue for a kind of a January start date so that they can partner with the Central Point style? What is the schedule?
Right. What I would normally do and what I've done in the past couple of times is that at the first of the year is I'll put out the RFP.
Oh, okay.
So kind of the... You know, as the old one gets wrapped up by the end of December, then we'll go out with the new one.
Okay.
So I don't think there's any necessarily any
formal timeline or conventional
timeline that says you should put it out here or there. So I mean, it could go out now for 2017 if we wanted to. It's just my own time frame.
Okay. I might check just to see. What do they expect?
Yeah, but it doesn't hurt to
and
to know who we want to contact and to directly contact certain ones.
Yeah, I find out who that is and then who they use, and they've had really good luck and been helpful actually in recommending different things. So.
And it's a normal thing. I mean, Eisler is the normal course of event. People come and go. Clients come and go.
And
that's just normal.
That.
Yes.
And we'll be back.
Yeah.
We really enjoy them, and they do a great job.
They do a great job. They're excellent, excellent folks.
Great.
So, okay.
That's high praise for an auditing firm.
Yeah, they are. Well, they're very customer service oriented. They try to reach out. They try to make sure that we understand what's going on, the latest and greatest things, and available for any questions during the year.
It feels like a very personal touch. Like they're here. And they want help.
As opposed to the one we had at that one time where the boss man, I heard from him twice. Once when I awarded the contract and once when I canceled the contract. And that just...
Didn't work.
No.
Regardless of how high quality work they might have done.
Yeah, regardless of how...
It's interesting the way the public perception is that an auditor is a bad thing. And frankly, when you're on the inside... Auditor's not a bad thing at all.
No,
in fact,
no.
If we could have two and afford it, I'd love, you know, that other perspective of, well, you're doing this right, but you can do this better. Okay, great. I want to know what we can do better, you know, and any kind of those constructive things. Auditors are great. They're not bad things.
In a fiscally responsible way.
Yeah.
I mean,
they're just not cheap.
Well, and that's where the struggle comes, because personal history of... took over the mission that they had not ever been audited. You know, it started in 83 and this was like 96 and they had never been audited. Well, they had some, you know, general reviews, but never officially been audited. Why? Well, I said, that's bogus. Who are we going to do this with? Well, we ended up the first 2 years we ended up with an operation out of Medford, and I forget exactly how we got that firm, but it was... You talk about, you know, you're running a Volkswagen business, and this is the Escalade company, and it was like, and they had a bunch of work, because they had to undo, you know, 17 years of whatever going on, all that kind of stuff. But it was like, the first year, the first audit was like $47,000, and it was like, you're kidding me.
Serious.
Yeah, and the board said, okay, guys, I asked them, I said, where do we get this money from, guys?
because you wanted this guy, and it was like, oh man. But they were able to establish a baseline, and it was an excellent baseline that allowed us to go. So it was good in that sense. It was like, oh my goodness, for me.
Yeah. Well, and you'd appreciate that, because then now you're doing things the way you want to see them, and it won't cost you that much anymore.
That's right.
So
first year is usually
quite
expensive.
Well, especially when it's never been done, really, you said. Okay. Anything else, sir?
No. That's all I have.
You're a good man. I'll agree with what anybody might say.
Thank you to your office for the time card plus.
Oh, yeah. That was that worked out super.
Yeah, I think, and I think the emphasis, as you heard from JJ, on the compliance and accountability is, that's going to be great.
Well, and you know, you're always going to have the people that go along with it, but they're only going along with it because they've never really had to do anything with it. Now they have to do something with it. This is not going to work.
I think we've discovered that many of the advocates for this are people who feel that, they have been taken advantage of to a certain extent, or at least not been accounted for fully. And a lot of people who don't want it are people who realize that they are now going to be accountable.
Yeah.
They need to.
Yeah.
The thing pretty that I think the board did well is that we apply it equally to everyone. Mm-hmm. So the application is fair. There isn't this construed that they're doing something and getting away with it.
Right.
If only we could do that. We're all doing the same thing, and this is equally as
and this was the board's decision to have this done, because
which has helped a whole lot.
Yeah, that has helped.
You can always just point back, and that's the point of having a board, is we can be the unliked.
So that's made all the difference, really, in several cases. The board
it was a directive.
Yeah. Correct.
Yeah. This is what we're doing.
And if you want to
take it up with
the board. More than welcome.
But it's worked itself through. It's been it's worked itself through. I think it's really gone very well.
It's a temporary growing pain.
I think
look back on and say,
what
was the big deal?
So. Good. Thank you, sir.
Thanks.
More business. We have four issues. We have approval of the final plat map of Summerfield Estates Phase 3 off of Redwood Highway.
Oh, great.
It's back in life.
Amazing
function.
All the projects that have been idle, but now they're coming to fruition and now they're getting built. People are buying brand new homes.
Yeah.
First homes and all that.
Well, there's the problem is there's old homes that are reasonably available. Rentals are really the big issue. See how that went on the recorder? That I'm sure that would play that well in the recorder. No, not yet. But no, that's been encouraging. See this progress being made. You see it tangible. So now I will entertain a motion of approval of the final plat map.
Sir, I would move for approval of the final plat map of Summerfield Phase 3 off Redwood Highway.
And I will second that motion. Any other comments on that?
Nope.
Good. All in favor, aye.
Aye.
It is unanimously approved. Great. Matters from commissioners.
Sir, what matters to you?
Your concerns. That's what matters to me, Commissioner.
There was this note that I have. The Glenn Wicks petitioned the board some time ago, and I don't remember how we resolved that. You might remember that he wanted to come in to petition the board. It was challenging the decision of a public works director. I think, frankly, the issue has been resolved, but there still is the issue of time and money spent through the administrative process by Mr. Wicks, the applicant. Mm. He makes a petition to the board. The letter to the BCC. Did we address this? Do you remember?
You have to refresh my mind.
I can give you a copy of this, and we can address it in another day. But he's actually going through and has delineated on several pages costs incurred by what he would say is a miscommunication or a challenge with our public works department, costs that he's incurred through his engineer and other things that he'd like to see.
Okay.
Not in the middle.
Yeah.
We've received this. We need an answer, Mr.
Yeah, Lee. Sure.
I think maybe he just needs to come in, have his day in court, so to speak, that he petitions the board for something of a regress on this, and we just have Mr. Brandon say this is why these costs were incurred.
When did the letter come in?
It was in May. And I've talked to Mr. Wicks, and he's, you know, process is moving forward. There still is this issue of his petition.
Okay. And rightly so.
If you're amenable, I think at some point we could schedule an opportunity for him to come in and take the time to hear.
I certainly would support that idea.
Okay, that's what I wanted to have.
Do you want Rob Brandis invited?
He would be invited. He needs to be invited to meet with that concern. You guys are having, I wouldn't say you guys, I've chosen to, I would say even after the fact, endorse the idea of these marijuana town halls. I was never formally asked to endorse this idea.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think it's a bad idea, but I don't need to participate in that. And I guess at some point, are they done? Maybe Commissioner Walker, who's really running point on this, could provide an update on their efficacy and outcome. I'm interested in looking at a rural residential setback, what kind of parameters mm-hmm. they could put on marijuana being grown. I've been thinking about the idea that I don't want to impact negatively the medical element, but the idea that you can grow 48 plants on an RR5 in a neighborhood seems to me like maybe not the intent of the legislation. What I would see is that if you have a card on RR5, you get to grow for you. That's fine, but you're not growing for everybody else, the six-card thing that's being done. That's outside of what an RR5 ought to be used for. That's almost a commercial business where you're doing a service for other people, and by definition, it's not your own personal needs anymore. Having a discussion about that in the specifics is something I'm interested in having. If it, whatever we do, I think I'm interested in sending it to a ballot, not having it be the end-all, be-all. We propose a draft ordinance, and before it's enacted, whatever it is, we refer it to the voters and say, hey, this is what we've come up with, and what do you think?
Yeah.
And then it takes the decision out of our hands. And but I think that for our timeline, pulling in Julie, hearing from Commissioner Walker, and being diligent to have something on maybe in November, maybe it's too late for that already, I don't know. It's just the beginning of July. But I didn't want to. I'm not driving this. I think that Commissioner Walker is certainly
right.
In charge
and
on this.
That's where the history of this thing comes from. And this is not, and I'm not using this in a pejorative sense against you, but you guys, this is her guys.
Yep.
This is her idea.
Her deal.
I jumped on, and I went to the first one simply because I wanted to be heard. I wanted to hear what was going on down there. And that was been my sole participation. I had made very few comments at those town halls. I did make some up in Wolf Creek.
Yeah.
But I have not made any kind of definitive comment. Should we not? That's not the issue. I have not made any of that.
And she's not speaking on behalf of the board when her presentation.
No.
I didn't endorse. I mean, I would have had a different. I think I've heard of how it starts out. And my whole standpoint is like, this is here. How can we work with the community to make this into a positive thing for everybody involved and figure out some of the. If you don't think there are challenges, your head is in the sand. There are challenges here.
Oh, sure.
How do we figure out how to solve these challenges?
Sure.
And unfortunately, we're put in the middle of property owners as the government entity charged with regulating this.
Sure.
Would I rather have the state, somebody, anybody else do it? Absolutely.
Yeah. And blame
the last person I would want is us.
And I felt the three in the Grants Pass, Wolf Creek, and Williams, those all went well. I mean, it was the, you know, initial, but they generally. Overall, they went well.
I'm hearing mixed reviews.
Well, I mean, it was well in the sense of people were speaking about it. The one in Williams was obviously that was pro.
Yeah.
Pro. Okay, good. And the one up at Wolf Creek was basically pro, but there were a few not for it up in Wolf Creek. Got here, it was just like, it was a very good cross-section, I think.
went down to Cape Junction, that just totally got out of hand. And I just, that's when I walked out. I wouldn't listen to that kind of thing. There wasn't any discussion taking place on that.
Yeah.
So overall, I think it provided everybody a good wake-up call in one sense of saying this is something that's taking place. There has to be decisions made on this. So let's have some input. And I think that was heard. Because I've gotten telephone calls from people mm-hmm. who were not supportive of it
yeah,
and have been very involved in that kind of thing. But yes, I have not. I don't know what the master timeline is. I haven't heard that. But I would think that as soon as she does come back next week, that would be on the front burner. And I think that would certainly be a Tuesday question to say, is there a timeline? What are we going to do?
I'm interested in hearing her vision and her philosophy. Because
yeah.
it very much is her vision and philosophy. Not to say that I don't have my own, but I think if we're going to operate as a board, we need to integrate these visions and have a strategy as a board to move something forward. Because ultimately, whatever it is that came out of that, if she's got something and you and I are not on the same page with that, it doesn't go anywhere. It's all for naught, these discussions, if there isn't a... Some sort
yes,
of
yes, I agree with that. I mean, and the RR5 situation, and it's not RR5. I mean, you might have RR5. This is 1.5 acres.
Yeah.
And that's a problem.
Maybe
not even that large.
Not all R5 are compliant with the required R5 acre minimum.
Yeah, and that's not where some of these things are. And if they're finding
it's
that out,
it's a fallacy to call it RR5, rural residential.
Yeah. Because there's places out there, you know, driving around looking at places and seeing people's concerns. You've got houses here, house there, house up here, up the road, house right down there, and this area right here, and it's 1.4 acres,
yeah.
something like 1.3. You know, they've cut down a bunch of trees.
Yeah.
Oh, they paid a $650 fine, I think it was.
Mm-hmm. Big deal. Yeah.
And now they get the fence up all around
they
the thing.
Three times that on the dirt they're going to grow this.
Oh, sure. So, but there has to, I think, yeah, it's a point that we need to address. And I think your idea of saying, this is what we have arrived at. Okay, voters, what do you think? Yes or no?
Yeah.
So good. Because it is a contentious issue with a lot of people. Understandably so for some
of
us.
I think it's only going to grow more so.
Oh.
No pun intended. As we approach the fall.
Oh, sure.
It's going to be very real in a lot of people. Right now, they're this or something. They're not.
So I think it would be good. But I think Tuesday would be
okay.
It would be a good time to bring their concerns up. Anything else, sir?
No, I think that's it.
Well, good for you. I have two things.
Yes, sir.
One is, would you have any problem with this? I thought David Brock-Smith sent an excellent email.
Oh, that was really nice.
And that I think that would be a good thing to have on Facebook, just to put his response to us on that, because I thought it was very well done.
Yeah, I'll check in. I actually have a conference call with him this afternoon. I can ask him if that's...
Yeah.
If he doesn't mind.
Yeah.
Can I have that?
Yeah.
Thank you.
And the second thing is that on last... Tuesday, I think it was, we had this situation came up. The question was, or two points were raised by Commissioner Walker, and I wanted to give you I want to hear your side of the story.
Oh, sure.
Everything is true until you find out the other half. Because there was comments made about the economic development of having people reimbursed for lands being used for what was it?
Road closures.
And to be reimbursed for that. And then also the one about the hiring this PR person. And,
sure.
And that was all fait accompli kind of a thing. But
absolutely.
I want to hear your side of it.
I've taken a look at the draft minutes and stuff that have been, and I still do address Commissioner Walker's questions. First off, we have to discuss these things in public, obviously.
Sure.
But at the same time, there's no better place to go than the source of those. They're construed as rumors. And so I'd be happy to answer in the future any questions that ever come about based on a position I may or may not have. So the first one with road closures, I think that there was a meeting where the question was asked, what can the county do to, I guess it would be compensate a business negatively impacted by a road closure or a bridge replacement or and some sort of public works project. The county has no capacity to do that currently. Mm-hmm. We don't make accommodations. Only thing we do is when we condemn a piece of property, we have to go through the state and federal processes for purchasing, and that's all highly regulated. It isn't about we have to do road closures, and that's just the benefit or negative of maintaining those roads. Nobody does that. ODOT doesn't make accommodations. I don't think the city does. Could we? We could. We certainly could. We could use economic development dollars if we chose on an application basis for a business who said, look, you guys closed this road in front of my place, and as a result, I had no business for a month. Well, that's unfortunate. How much were you negatively impacted by? Okay, yeah, we could make a grant in that order. Would we ever do that? Would I endorse such an idea? I don't think so, because if you open that Pandora's box, we maintain 580 miles of roads in Josephine County. A lot of those go in front of businesses or provide access to. We try to reduce the time that they're negatively impacted. Every project we do, there's always a consideration of keeping the time frame and the challenge as little as possible. The second we provide $1 to one business negatively impacted, there's an argument made by every other business that ever was negatively impacted by a road closure or in a pothole to saying, hey, I need my $5, I need my $1,000. So it's a terrible precedent that I would never endorse. Is it possible? Absolutely.
Yeah.
Okay. And I've never made a promise. I've never made a promise of hardly anything, probably anything, because I know I can't do that as one member of the board. But I have no problem discussing things philosophically.
Mm-hmm.
The other one having to do with the public relations position, I asked and was endorsed, granted permission by the board to go investigate a public relations element that we currently don't do in any robust. We do very little in an organized fashion from the county perspective as far as interfacing with the public on a regular basis. And I'd like to see something. Boards have come and gone, and they've always strived. I think every board that I've been involved with in the last almost 6 years has had elements and goals and tried to do something. But as long as it's in the board's hands, in my opinion, it's going to have those life frames of an elected term. It really shouldn't be a up and down thing. It should be a consistent thing, and really staff driven. We're coming to that conclusion. I established an ad hoc committee that was not formally endorsed by the board to investigate this. We're going through the processes of what would that look like. Ironically, ONC, the ONC Association, is doing the same thing. They've always had for the last 50 years this ebb and flow of need to get out PR, better improve their message penetration. City does a pretty good job, but they have a monthly bill that goes out to all of their subscribers. Chamber's doing a great job. But how can we leverage what they're doing with a broader customer base? So that's all we're doing. Will the recommendation that the staff and I put together to the board include hiring somebody? Quite possibly, for that longevity standpoint, that it shouldn't just be based on the qualifications of a board member who's good with Facebook or staff member that comes and goes. You've got professionals in every element of the county, from parks to finance. We don't have anybody on staff who's a public relations expert. Says, do this, your bang for your buck is good. Don't do that. Tried it 100 times and you're never going to get anywhere. Seems to make sense to me, but that's ultimately a decision of the board. Mm-hmm. To hire people.
Okay.
Give them those things. So, no, I did not hire anybody. I don't have the authority to do so, and I know that better than most. So,
okay.
That time frame, I like to get things done. Calendar's missing, but
it's been moved. It's not missing.
It's great. I don't think it should be there. The time frame is that I'm having a pre-meeting today with some staff and then we're going to present the idea that's already kind of been still in the very early stages of being fleshed out at the staff meeting next week. We'll come out of that, kind of codify a direction, and then following that meeting, at the earliest convenience, present it to the board for, this is where we start with a discussion for the board. We're not starting from scratch. We have something that the staff has looked at and they feel comfortable with. What is the board?
What is this?
A PR strategy, a campaign, and how do we integrate everything we do from the board's hour-long deal on CAJO, our Facebook, what the fairgrounds is doing, parks, public safety, regular press releases, what the chamber's doing. How does that all fold into the greater mission? That's all we're looking for.
Okay. I mean, it's like, is there a need for that? Yes. That's a given.
I think the staff agrees.
You know, how do we, I mean, from my view, I'm saying, is there a need for that? Absolutely. How do we accomplish that need? That's the motor.
Yep.
And so.
Well, we're going to come up with a proposal of ways, and I like the phased approach. There's the ONC, there was this idea of like, well, let's just go out and hire somebody for $85,000 and blah, blah, blah. And it's like, yeah, but if you make a mistake when you're spending $85,000 and you've got something going out to 150,000 people, maybe we shouldn't have said it that way. Yeah, let's
that's their first lead story.
Right? Let's just ease into this whole thing and, you know, build on our successes, learn from our mistakes when they're small, and, yeah, take advantage of the low-cost opportunities we're not fully utilizing right now. And as it is successful, we start doing more. That's my vision.
And one of the advantages that we are now able to enjoy, how long that enjoyment might be allowed is something again, but able to enjoy now, is that we can even talk about the potentiality of something like this happening without it being conveyed to the public as this is a done deal and you're going to get screwed financially because they want to make. Well, we can at least talk to this, talk about it. I don't have any problem talking about issues and that kind of stuff.
Core belief is that this is something that we have to do.
Mm-hmm.
What often gets misconstrued out in the hinterland is, how can you even be talking about this when you haven't solved this problem?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't believe that any one issue we have here is siloed so much that it doesn't affect anything or everything else. This PR element affects everything we do. It's like a restaurant who doesn't want to advertise. They cut their ad budget and they can't understand why they don't have any customers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You know, it's like, it doesn't work that way. You've got to be doing it all
mm-hmm.
and doing it well. So I think we're making great progress in so many different things. This thing is kind of languished.
Okay. Anything else?
New banners.
No,
like that. Yeah. The fairgrounds. I mean, the old posters. Peggy should never be satisfied, but she should be happy that.
She's happy with it. She said, "Oh, it's always
something." It was always going to be.
Yeah, but that's good. So.
It's made that improvement.
Okay. Anything else, sir?
Nope.
11:03, and we are done.